Pigweed here. Today we review a porter and discuss isolationism. Hello and welcome to Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Good evening, Crowhill.
Good evening, Pigweed.
What's on your mind?
Well, you know, around the holidays, I've got a child who is expecting, and she's not a child, of course, a child of mine who was expecting, and there was a baby shower, and so the guys went off to a place to get a beer, you know, to not be around the baby shower.
Thank God.
Which, by the way, there's this trend to invite guys to baby shower. Don't do it.
Ladies, please.
Just don't do it. It's a ladies' thing. Don't just involve the guys. Cut that out.
Yes. Yeah. Send us off.
I know. We'll do something else. So, anyway, we're sitting around chatting about this and that, and we got on the topic of Ukraine. And there are some very different opinions about what we should do with Ukraine.
Right.
The older I get, the more suspicious I get of attempts to get us involved in military conflicts here, there, and everywhere.
Right.
And, I mean, I'm not completely against it all the time, but...
Foreign entanglements.
Yes, foreign entanglements.
Foreign entanglements.
But the idea that we're just, you know, always involved. We got to always be sticking our toe in everything. And,
yeah.
I, you know, and young men getting sent off to die, I got my suspicions. So that's what's on my mind. You know, maybe we don't need to be involved in all this
kind of
stuff.
Maybe we don't. And we have a long history of saying we're not going to be involved.
And then getting involved anyway.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, we'll go through that after I go through this.
Yes. Look at this. Sam Adams, OVP.
OVP.
Oaked Vanilla Porter.
So,
what are you looking for?
The box that this thing came in.
Oh,
so, so Sam Adams has a winter 12-pack.
Right.
And it's called the Cold IPA, their normal winter lager, and this, which I've never seen before.
Yeah, I haven't either. It says, complex and malty with a hearty, warming character, this porter features notes of vanilla and oak, hints of coffee, and a touch of sweetness. OVP might just be your holiday party's new MVP. So that's the pitch. Sam Adams is usually everything. Like right down the middle on everything. And
that is solid, and yeah, I'm getting vanilla. I'm getting
definite vanilla.
Uh huh.
Definite vanilla, and
you're always gonna get always gonna get some hints of coffee.
Maybe a touch too much vanilla, to tell you the truth. But there's definite vanilla in there, and I'm getting the malty sweetness.
Malty sweetness.
It's nice.
That's really quite nice. Wouldn't expect anything less from old Sam Adams.
They do an excellent job.
Yeah.
I know there are some home brewers who criticize Sam Adams. I think they do a fantastic job
as far
in everything
as,
they do.
As far as your big commercial, I think Sierra Nevada and Sam Adams never have a loser.
I've never had one that was bad.
No, I think that they are the craftiest of the big producers, I think. Didn't Sam Adams buy Dogfish Head?
Did they?
Somebody's got Dogfish Head now.
Huh. I have a friend who doesn't like their cherry wheat beer.
Yeah.
I actually like it. Oh, I think it's a good summertime beer. But maybe we'll try that one in July or something.
Very good. Well, apparently our isolation. Well, you want to give some broad definitions of what that
means? Of isolationism? Yeah, basically it means when you want to minimize involvement in international affairs, especially in the political and military aspects of international affairs.
Yes, it does tend. Right.
Yeah.
There's some economic and cultural aspects, but mostly and certainly in the beginning, it just had to do with, we're not in Europe anymore.
Yeah, and usually it has to do with, you know, let's focus on our own problems.
Yeah.
Let's you know, there's that old saying, the cobbler's son has no shoes. You know, let's like. Let's focus on our own family. Let's focus on our own people and not be sending them off and sending money off everywhere. Isolationism does not necessarily imply withdrawal from foreign trade, but sometimes it's closely associated with protective tariffs. So there's one thing that's interesting about isolationism is people think of isolationism in senses like you're trying to be self-sufficient, you're trying to, you know, not trade. That's not it. Like,
no.
So neutrality, like Switzerland is neutral, right? They don't get involved in foreign conflicts, but they're very involved in the world. They're very involved in a lot of things that, you know, go on all over the world.
All right.
So it really has to do with, you know, not... In the American context, it means we're not going to get involved in those stupid European wars anymore.
Yes. Yes, you figure we just... Are you ready to move on to the history, or do you have more of a definition?
Well, no, I think that's fine for definitions.
Okay.
Yes,
so it really goes back to the colonial days,
mm-hmm.
even before we were a country.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, look, we're not... Yes, we're still part of England, but...
What do we care about your stupid conflict over
there? Yes, you guys have been fighting each other for centuries.
And
we're
here we are over
now.
In Virginia, and we're growing, doing our farm. Why do I care that you're
and
in
why,
United
why
France?
Do I care? Right. We don't need these entangling alliances. And what I liked was that we didn't even want an alliance with France.
Yeah. Until it was like we were going to lose unless we did.
I mean, it really pains me to have to acknowledge the role of the French in the American Revolution.
Yeah.
I'd just love to not say it, but yes, Frenchies.
You know, the thing
I
is,
get it. Rochambeau.
We grew up at a time where French meant, you know, surrender monkeys. It meant here's a French rifle, never been fired, only dropped once. You know, that was our view of the French growing up. But historically speaking, the French were some kick-ass...
Extremely warlike.
Yes.
And I just went to see Napoleon.
Yeah,
I'll be able to talk about that. Too.
Very warlike. It's not like they were a bunch of pansies in the past.
Just because they got steamrolled by the Nazis doesn't mean, that they have a long history of that.
No, they don't have a long history of being... They have a long history of being pretty tough, as a matter of fact. Charles Martel, wasn't he French?
Yeah.
So you've got some
back to the Muslim invasion.
You've got some serious warfare going on there. But recently, we tend to think of the French as compromising surrender monkeys.
The French, they haven't the stomach for war. They would rather make love with their faces than fight.
Okay.
Okay, that's from Last of the Mohicans.
Oh, there you go. Okay, that's good. A little bit of cultural enrichment here.
With
good.
Their faces. And there's a cat. So that didn't work. So, all right, so we win our independence. You're blocking the shot!
Bingo, what are you doing? All right. So we win our independence, and we're thinking, well, even before we win our independence, as you said, it's like we don't really care about all this European stuff anymore.
But you can imagine them going, all right, guys, we got our own country.
Yeah.
Europe's a million miles away.
Right.
We are out.
Yeah.
And then what happens shortly? Then after our first president, we get our second president, and he's like, well, there's Muslim terrorists in the...
Barbary Pirates.
Which were called Barbary Pirates at the time, but...
They were Muslim terrorists. That's exactly what they were.
And so they're like, oh gosh, all right, let's send some ships over the Mediterranean, clean this up, and then we're out.
From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. That's exactly right. So we did, but the interesting thing about that is even though we went and took care of a foreign problem, we didn't get entangled. It's not like we didn't get into a treaty. We didn't make some sort of obligation. We just said, look, you're picking on our ships. We're going to go kick your butt.
Yeah, this was more of a trade issue than anything else.
Yes.
So, all right. I'm not going to knock us for that. So then we get to the 19th century, and we're like, all right, we're done with that. And we still had a series of wars, but they tended to focus more on our own. You know, we had the War of 1812. That war came to us.
Yeah.
You had the Mexican War, you had the Spanish-American War, kicking the Europeans out of our Mediterranean.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Again, so I wouldn't call that foreign entanglement.
Right.
But it is.
It was basically a growing assertion of our power and influence over our area.
Yeah.
And
then we got busy just fighting ourselves.
Yes.
For a while. And actually, we were pretty good there. 1865, I guess, was to World War I.
Yeah, we were kind of out of it for quite a long
time. All right, that's a pretty good run there.
Yeah, that is pretty good.
And we had, there was a heavy dose of isolationism when it came to this World War One.
Yes.
We don't need
We didn't want to be involved, because we hadn't been involved in any wars for a long time, and we just thought about, you know, this all this crazy junk going on in Europe, and they're always fighting everybody over all this dumb stuff. We don't care. You know, we'll buy your tea, and we'll trade with you and whatever, but we don't need to be involved
and
in that stuff.
And we did an okay job, I think, right? So it was, 1914? And we didn't get involved until maybe 1917.
Yeah, but so
we let them trench warfare themselves to death for about 3 years.
Yeah, but the politicians wanted to be involved. You know, here the problem is, there's frequently a difference of opinion between the hoity-toity politicians who want to be so important on the world stage and the average American guy who's just like running a factory or having a farm or something like that. He didn't want to have anything to do with this stuff. But the politicians, they want to be, they want to be involved in this stuff. So
yeah, they're like,
the politicians,
I never even heard of Serbia.
Exactly. Why do they care about this? So the politicians got us involved in World War One, sinking of the Lusitania. You know, we started doing some sneaky stuff. The politicians started doing some sneaky stuff to get us involved in the war, which now, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't know as much about the World War One as I probably ought to, but I know that a lot of people think of World War One as that was a dumb war. World War Two was a serious war against, you know, the bad side. But I recently heard a talk where somebody was saying, no, it was, you know, the Kaiser was pretty bad too.
Right.
That World War One, there was a legit cause to fighting that, but I don't know if that's true.
So at the end of World War One, the U.S. Senate rejected the Treaty of Versailles because it would have required the U.S. to join the League of Nations.
Ah, right.
So that's an isolationist strain. They're like,
yes.
All right, the war is over. The League of Nations is just going to tie us to your future wars.
Yeah, we're not just because we got involved in this one doesn't mean we're going to get involved in all the other ones.
Right.
Yeah.
Then World War II brought an end, so we had a pretty open immigration splurge there up until World War One, and they kind of dialed things back afterwards. But I like this one here that in the Immigration Act of 1917, fewer than 150,000 immigrants had been allowed to enter the U.S. by 1929. This is after 15 million immigrants had come in earlier, you know, with the Statue of Liberty and the whole business. But the law restricted the immigration of undesirables from other countries, including idiots, imbeciles, epileptics, alcoholics, poor, criminals, beggars, and any person suffering attacks of insanity. So that was...
Okay.
Really? That guy's an idiot. That guy's an imbecile. You can't come in.
That guy drinks too much. Can't come into this country.
Do they have specific definitions for? I think of idiots and imbeciles as kind of being the same.
An interesting question. Is there a difference between an idiot and an imbecile?
Apparently, there was in the law of 1929.
Okay.
All right, so,
there was a clamping down on immigration that a lot of people don't know. We cut immigration way back.
Oh no! For like 60 years, they're like, look, we just let in 14 million people in a country much, much smaller than we have today. And they're like, you know what? We need to give these people time to settle. There's going to be basically no immigration from 1929 till the 1960s.
You know, honestly, we need to do that for like the next 100 years to assimilate the millions of people we brought in the last couple of years.
Yeah, just say, look, all right, we did that. We let you have your immigrant surge.
Mm-hmm. Now it's time to close the borders and just...
That's a little teaser for a future show.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, no, seriously, this time, is when World War II breaks out. No, seriously. We meant it last time, but we didn't follow through. We're not getting involved in this one.
And a lot of people don't know that the majority of the American public was against entering World War II for quite a long time.
And what was so the largest... I don't know if it was a political party or a political movement. What was the isolationist group? The Charles Lindbergh group. Do you have a name for those guys? Because they were
America First Committee.
I love it. So there, and it swelled to its highest ranks until December something.
Yeah, like the day before the Japanese attacked us.
Yeah, and everybody's like, oh, so much for that. Yeah. You know, we had a good thing going there, yes. And I think the whole organization disbanded about 3 days later.
Yeah. It's like, okay, we were trying to not get involved, but if you're going to punch us, we got. And to his credit, Charles Lindbergh, after
who led
this group, was saying, you know, don't get involved. Once we got attacked, he went and fought in World War II.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, good for you. Yeah.
Now, the War on Terror, again, here we go. We felt like we got sucker punched. I guess we got to get involved in this.
Yeah.
But it also has led to a certain amount of...
drawing back, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're a lot of people are thinking, why are we involved with all these lunatics who... It's almost like, if you think about the colonial government, their attitude was, look, these crazy Europeans, they've been fighting one another over stupid things for hundreds and hundreds of years. We don't want to be involved in that.
Yeah.
And then now here we are in the modern world, and... we've got these crazy people in the Middle East fighting one another over stupid things, and there's a natural sense of, like, just never mind. We don't want to be involved.
All right, well, let me quote Donald J. Was it Jehoshaphat Trump? What is it, John?
John. Yeah.
December 1st, 2016.
Okay.
There is no global anthem, no global currency, no certificate of global citizenship. We pledge allegiance to one flag. That flag is the American flag. From now on, it's going to be America first. And that resonated.
Yeah.
Again, it's resonated from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
We you know, we always loved the sound of that. And but there is some of that here. And how about Senator Vance from Ohio? I'm sick of Joe Biden focusing on the border of a country I don't care about while he lets the border of our own country become a total war zone.
Yes.
So there's an effort right now while they try to get some more billions. I don't know. How deep are we into the Ukrainian? What, 60 billion or something like that?
I don't know.
Maybe 60 billion was just like the first outlay of funds. And so you have people. Conservatives, or you call them isolationists, but conservatives going,
why are we spending this money on?
Yes, and actually, we will spend this money, and now you're asking for Israeli money. All you got to do is give us
some border protection. So, you know,
which is not even isolationist. That's just what every country in the world does. Again,
let's back up historically just a touch. This isn't entirely a right phenomenon. When we were involved in Vietnam,
uh-huh.
It was the left that was saying, you know, what are we doing involved in these conflicts over here, you know? So the idea of isolationism being some sort of a right-wing thing is not true.
No.
That the left was saying, more wars, you know.
Yes, your conservatives have been more militaristic than liberals.
In some times, yeah. I mean, are communist liberals? They're pretty militaristic.
Yeah. So that's a good point. That was very much a a Democrat left movement.
Yeah, the anti-war movement was very much Democrat, and it was in a sense an isolationist movement. It was saying what do I care whether Vietnam goes communist or
yeah.
Whatever else.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, let's. So, from my first impulse, like everybody else, was oh gosh, Russia is on the move,
mm-hmm.
and Ukraine is just a poor innocent country just sitting there and mm-hmm. being attacked for no reason. And we said, all right, we got to support the Ukrainians. We're getting a little war weary, and also going, hey, Europe, isn't this your problem?
Well, there's unfortunately the story is a little more complicated when it comes to Ukraine because there's a bunch of different currents going on. One is that we've been pushing NATO farther and farther to the east, which has been provoking Russia.
Yeah.
Another element of it It's the whole Burisma, Joe Biden, Hunter Biden thing, where there's been this perception, true or false, there's been this perception that Ukraine was a corrupt country, and that Joe Biden was somehow involved with them, you know, that he was getting money out of them. That this was, so there's a lot of just weird things going on with this whole
Ukrainian situation. Are we entirely motivated by containing Russia, or do they have some dirt on Joe?
Exactly.
Our foreign policy is being driven by not wanting to be exposed as a corrupt.
Right, and there's also the question of whether Ukraine, people say we're fighting to defend democracy. A lot of people will say, well, Ukraine isn't a democracy, it never has been. So there's a lot of other things going on with this whole Ukraine situation. It's not just, you know, do we want to, you know, Russia is attacking them. Who's going to be next? Will it be Poland? You know, I don't think Russia wants a war with NATO. Yeah. And we were
That's Ukraine trying to get a sales pitch.
Yeah.
For Ukraine, if we fall, you guys are next. Give me some billions.
Right. Yeah. Now the other thing about, I don't want to get too involved in Ukraine because we're talking about a broader topic, but the other thing that disturbs me about the Ukraine
situation. But it's a European problem that the Europeans could take care of.
Yes. Yes. It is a problem, and here we are giving all kinds of money to get Ukraine to fight a war that they really can't win. And that's a little disturbing, that we're just like condemning an entire generation of Ukrainians to death to fight a war that we think is somehow in our best interest. I don't like that. Now, obviously, I don't like Russia invading Ukraine either. But the question, the bottom line question from a kind of like from a, if you're looking at it from an isolationist perspective, is why do we care? There are a lot of things that go along in the world, like the Houthis shooting on ships in the Red Sea, mm-hmm. that we do care because there's commerce going through there. That directly involves us. But, like, what do we care if Russia takes Ukraine from one perspective?
I mean, that sounds mean.
I know. It does sound mean. And it's, I don't want one country to invade another country and kill. It's an obviously horrible thing. But horrible things go on.
But I think Europe can handle this.
Yeah. Yeah. And 10 horrible things happen before breakfast, you know, everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Does anybody care about the Sudan and the people in Nigeria and wherever else?
If someone were to say, this isn't our problem, let Europe take care of it, is that isolationist, really? Because it's not necessarily saying that you don't want to be involved in any foreign conflict. You're just saying, I don't want to be involved in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, in the traditional sense of, we don't want to fight Europe's wars, as we've been saying since Thomas Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's a little bit isolationist, but I'm okay with that. Isolationist isn't a dirty word. So what about that? In terms of A, is this our problem? The shared burden,
mm-hmm.
and the economic aspect of it in terms of keeping the Red Sea and the Houthis under control.
Right. So, well,
you want to do that now?
Let's talk about that. Because right now, you know, the United States Navy keeps most of the shipping lanes open all over the world. That's, we've taken that burden on ourselves.
Yeah.
Nobody really helps us with that. The U.S. Navy is at its smallest. We have fewer ships now. I remember Ronald Reagan had a 600 ship Navy. I think we have 300 ships now.
Hmm.
It's pretty bad. And the Navy needs a lot of help. But despite the fact that we have a smaller Navy, we're still going to defend Taiwan. We're going to defend the Red Sea. We've got all these obligations that we've taken on ourselves. And if we're going to trade in a ugly world where there are Houthis and, you know, various other kinds of bad actors, okay, we have to be willing to fight from time to time to protect those those roots and those things. Yeah, but why does it have to be us all of a sudden?
Exactly. All that stuff that's leaving China, that's on those ships coming through here, it's not all coming to the United States.
Right.
Everybody's got a stake in this.
Why do we have to be the ones who do all this? Shouldn't we get... Now, okay, right now in the Red Sea...
You could pay us to escort these ships that carrying your goods, or you could get your Navy out there and do a little work.
Now, supposedly there is somewhat of a coalition in the Red Sea right now where there's other countries are involved, but usually it's a very small thing. It's like a token thing.
Right, even the Italians and the Spanish, really, do we have to? Your coastal European nations, yeah, you do.
Shouldn't it really be the responsibility of the countries in that region? Because they're the ones who, I guess they benefit. You know, there's tolls for going through the Suez Canal.
Yeah.
Right? So shouldn't Egypt be heavily involved in this sort of thing?
I mean, the Saudis have one of the largest military budgets in the world. And you know what? You can't drink that oil. You got to move it somewhere. You want to drive it around Africa?
So is it isolationist to say the United States has taken on too much of a burden in terms of keeping the world safe and everything?
Well, that's what Trump said right from the start. Look, you guys aren't paying. You know, you're not paying your share of NATO. You're not paying your share of the UN. The gravy train is over. What's wrong with that?
No, I don't see anything wrong. And that's not technically isolationist. That's just saying we've been paying too much. You guys got to step up. So I think the isolationist label has become a bit of a slur, where you call something isolationist and somehow that's, you know, I guess right now people think that's a bad thing.
That's an insult.
But,
huh?
But I'm not sure it's an insult. I mean, there's an element of that perspective that is, it's okay with me.
So you want to talk about isolationism versus free trade, or you want to continue? I got some military stuff here to talk. Military and foreign aid.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's get some numbers.
Let's do that first. Okay, I got some numbers here. Here's a little quiz for you. All right. How many military bases do we have in Germany and Japan?
Wow. I would say probably 10.
Me too. No, Japan has 120, and Germany has 119.
Those are our military bases.
Yes, and South Korea 73. Yeah, I thought it was like 5 there, 7 there, and an extra one, and a couple more. Does that seem like too much?
Well, we don't have that many in Ohio.
And we've got, I mean, what do I have? 25 in the UK.
Wow.
44 in Italy. 12,000 troops here. Japan is 53,000 troops. Germany, 34,000 troops. What are we doing? So we got 173,000 troops. We got 750 bases in 80 countries.
Wow.
173,000 in 159. Well, this is misleading. 173,000 troops, yes. 159 countries. Sometimes it's just like 10 Marines at the embassy.
That's
misleading. But right. But still, 120?
Yeah, and why are we still defending Germany?
Germany?
Yeah.
At least Japan is, you know, they're still in that nasty neighborhood. We got 4 bases in Spain, 44 in Italy, 13 bases in Turkey.
Yeah. Well, Turkey, actually, it's good to have them in Turkey because we need to be able to project power into the Middle East. So I understand that. But, like, Germany,
Well, 10 in Saudi. Actually, I'm okay with 10 in Saudi Arabia. 10 in Kuwait. I know that makes the Muslims mad.
So it's important for us to have a military presence various places in the world so we can project power, so we can defend our interests. That's fine. I understand that. But why are we still defending Europe at the level that we are? I mean, can't Europe... For heaven's sakes, it's not, they're not all bombed out, you know, rubble from World War II. They've come back, you know. They're better now. So why can't they defend themselves?
Yeah.
I don't understand why we would have
the strongest economy in Germany. We have 120 bases with 34,000 guys.
Yeah, and the people, we probably have lots and lots of equipment over there. We have lots of tanks and lots of planes and all kinds of stuff over there. Yeah.
Which, in a way, but couldn't you have the, how many, put 1,000 tanks in one base? You know,
you could.
A thousand guys, and you want some military thinkers who are on the ground in contact with their military thinkers to react if something happens.
Yeah.
But at 120 bases?
I don't think that's necessary. And also, it seems like old thinking. I don't think that Russia is the threat that China is. So how many bases do we have where we can stop China? Now, we have some in Japan. That's good.
Right. It looks like we've got one in Singapore and one in... Do you think we've got one in Cambodia?
Apparently, we helped the Australians get a hold of some nuclear submarines, which is good.
That's good.
I like the idea of Australians stepping up a bit and trying to help out.
We have a couple of things out here. How about the guys at the Johnston Atoll? he's like, what? Can you imagine, imagine getting your papers and go...
An atoll? What are you talking about? What is that?
Where I'm going to...
Some 10-square-mile hunk of rock in the middle of the Pacific.
Ascension Island.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have to have bases in weird places. Like, I get that. It's kind of like the Falkland Islands. Remember the battle over the Falkland Islands?
Yeah.
This weird, windswept piece of junk?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we obviously have to project power all over the world because we trade all over the world. And just as we're seeing right now in the Red Sea, that in order to protect trade routes, you have to have a military presence. I totally understand that. But I think we're doing this disproportionately. We spend way too much on doing all this work. And the rest of the world has come to rely upon us doing this.
Right.
And they need to step up.
So that's just our military expenditures on that. How about just in foreign aid in general? We've got... we spend $10 billion a year more than the next.
So how much do we spend a year in foreign aid?
Let me see. We have $5 billion.
And what would foreign aid include? What is that? Military aid? Is that economic aid? Is that, you know, what are we doing?
Yes. Falls in one of two categories, military aid and humanitarian, economic development and emergency relief. And I realize, like, so here we go. Number three, Ethiopia gets $815 million in foreign aid. And you're going, how am I giving them all? But what if they have, you know, Islamist monsters at their doorstep?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd rather them, you know, you'd rather keep them on our side.
Yeah.
Isn't that money well spent?
It's hard to say. I mean, a lot of these things, it's also, whenever it's millions, it's like, that's chump change in the U.S. budget.
This breaks it down better. Five categories of foreign aid: economic assistance, mm-hmm. humanitarian aid, multilateral economic contributions, bilateral development aid, and military aid.
Now, see, the thing is, we're in a conflict right now, not so much against Russia as against China. And China is going around the world putting, you know, building facilities, trying to do their Belt and Road Initiative. They're trying to get into all these countries. And if we're going to go to some country, like countries in our own hemisphere, we go down to South America and say, we don't want you to do this kind of stuff. They're going to say, give me the money.
They're going to say, well, China was just going to give us $500 million.
What are you going to get us?
For some mining rights over here.
So those kinds of things, I understand that that's necessary. We need to make sure that we're competitive with our adversaries. And right now, China's our main adversary.
This was a surprising fact. It says, compared to other nations, the U.S. by far spends more foreign aid than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Germany's the next. We spend $10 billion more than they do. That said, when considering foreign aid as a percentage of total GDP, the U.S. is one of the lowest spenders among all developed countries.
Wow. Okay.
Well, which is really the number you need to look at, yeah, I guess, not exactly. the raw number.
Yeah, the raw number doesn't really mean anything.
It's much more than Liechtenstein.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So as a percentage of GDP, what number are we there?
Yeah, I don't know exactly, but it says one of the lowest of developed countries, and here are top spenders. Look where our money is going.
This is where we Iraq, of course.
Jordan,
Syria.
Syria?
Why are we giving money to them?
I'm not even sure whose side we're on.
Exactly. Ethiopia, okay.
Afghanistan, how much have we already dumped into that?
And now it's all controlled by ISIS. South Sudan, is that the good guys or the bad guys? I can't remember. Yeah, Nigeria, Democratic Republic of Congo. What do we care about that?
I don't know. Well, actually, that's where all of the...
That's where our bastards were.
That's where our bastards were, but it's where our EV batteries are going to come from.
Oh, right, yes.
But that's too late now. The Chinese have already bought all
already
that.
Already bought all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so we're spending all... Well, the numbers drop down pretty substantially. You know, billions, and then you're into almost a billion. It drops down to just like hundreds of millions.
So Middle East, Africa, Bangladesh, what is that? I guess that's Asia.
Yeah.
Tanzania.
Yeah, I don't know why are we spending money on Tanzania. I don't understand that. But I am interested in the question of whether the percentage of GDP that we spend against other countries, because that's a better measurement.
That is a better measurement, and that's sort of what is used to determine your contribution to NATO.
Hmm.
Every country is supposed to kick in, I believe it's 2%.
Based on their GDP.
Yes, yeah. And that's what Donald Trump was saying. This is the formula. We already know it, and you are not kicking in your 2%.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, that's fair.
That's totally fair.
So what's the difference between America first, in the sense that Trump meant by that term, and isolationism?
I think they're very similar, in that we need to take care of our border before we take care of somebody else's border. That seems perfectly fair. Mm-hmm. We need to have trade agreements that benefit America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing that Trump said that made some sense was when we enter into an agreement, it should be to our benefit. You know,
is that controversial? Is that asking too much from your political leaders to think about the citizens that they represent?
And that every other country should do the same thing. Everybody should be looking out for their own best interests.
Right, and he saw these trade agreements. He's going, these aren't working for us. Yeah. We can rework some of this.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the economic perspective of it here. Mm-hmm. Free trade benefits American producers who want to sell their goods.
Yeah.
But it also encourages these manufacturers to move their businesses overseas.
Yeah, so this is an element of isolationism that isn't actually isolationism, but we've now become dependent on other countries for things that we really shouldn't be dependent on. Like, for example, Taiwan makes like the vast majority of the microchips.
Yeah.
So if Taiwan were to be taken over, we would be sorely in bad shape for microchips. Apparently, in maritime stuff, I was talking to a professional colleague who works in the maritime industry, and she said that the big number there is 0.4. 0.4 is the percentage, 0.4% of the ships that bring goods to the United States are U.S. flagged.
Oh,
they're what? The 99.6% of them are some other countries. And then it gets to the question of, like, if we got in a war with China, and we needed to supply our ships with just, you know, oil to keep them going, we don't have enough ships to do that. We'd have to rely on other people's ships to do that kind of thing.
And we have vital things like, you know, prescription drugs and antibiotics
exactly.
and stuff like that that have to come from who's basically our enemy.
Yes. Well, so, how do we get in a situation where we depend on China for things that, like, if we didn't have antibiotics, that would be a pretty bad thing.
So, how about hemispheric isolation?
Right.
Are you telling me that all of this manufacturing
can't be done in
Brazil?
Well, I heard somebody talking about this.
I mean, I'm sure there's a good reason, but...
Yeah. They were saying that there were supply chain issues and other kinds of things. Like, you can't just all of a sudden take the microchip industry in Taiwan and move it to Wyoming.
Can you move Nike sneakers to El Salvador?
Maybe. But those aren't strategic things. Like, who cares who makes the sneakers? I'm more worried about, like, who controls the supply of energy? Who controls the supply of strategic minerals that we need for our military? Who controls medicines? Things that we really have to have to make the country function. And unfortunately, we've become way too dependent on nations that don't have our best interests at heart.
Yes. So we develop the technology here, we take it over there, build a factory, and then they steal the technology.
Right.
That's not good.
Or they just steal it from our universities because Yes, so that is very, very stupid. And I don't understand, like, who's been asleep at the switch all this time to allow this to happen?
Is the workforce so much more reliable, cheap, and educated in China that all of these factories, and I'm talking about, yes, tennis shoes and whatever, every damn thing you pick up that says made in China on it, can't be done in our hemisphere? Is it because, right? Is that the case? Or is there a certain stability to a dictatorship that you're going, you know, if we had had all of our factories in Venezuela 20 years ago, they'd have been taken over by these communists. And that wouldn't have worked out for us.
Well, there was a time.
How about India? At least that's still on the other side of the world, but they're not commies.
Yeah. So I think it was the 80s and the 90s where a lot of people were saying that we don't want to be a manufacturing economy. We want to be a service economy. We want all those poor third world people, you know, making the shoes and whatnot. And we want to be the people who do the marketing and the service stuff. And that was...
Is that working out?
I think that was a short-sighted... idea.
How many
for a bunch
small
of different
towns were relied on a single furniture manufacturer?
Right.
A single washing machine manufacturer.
Yeah. So we've hollowed that out.
And we've hollowed out these cities, and you're left with a bunch of meth heads.
Yeah. And the other thing about it is you can't, you know, you have a distribution, an intelligence distribution. You can't have your entire country doing computer programming or, you know, doing high-end white-collar work. It just doesn't work. You have people who need to have jobs where they're doing manual labor or they're doing something basic.
What would be the consequences of less free trade, higher tariffs?
Mm-hmm.
Would it be worth... high wage jobs and more expensive washing machines and tennis shoes.
We've already got that coming with Biden's environmental regulations.
Yeah, right. So let's... You mean the higher prices?
Higher prices.
Are they getting us more jobs? Is it getting us more jobs?
No, because they're probably built in Singapore or something. They're not built here. So I think... my concern with all this is... nobody with any brains is watching all this and coming up with these policies. Like, there's nobody in control. There's nobody at the helm who is looking long-term and what's in the best interest of the United States and what we ought to be doing in terms of industrial policy and all these other things. It's very disappointing. They're just reacting to what their donors want them to do. Their donors say, we want to be able to build stuff in China, so they pass laws to let them build stuff in China.
Yeah, let's play this little game, which I don't mind playing, of if we didn't spend our money on that, think of all the money we could have spent on this.
Yeah,
All right,
okay.
so I'm going to give you the National Priorities Project,
Okay.
who says that since 9/11 we have spent $21 trillion on militarism abroad. So I'm going to tell you what they say we could have spent that money on, can and could have, and see how your priorities align with theirs.
Okay.
So instead of these $21 trillion, here we go. I'm just going to run through them real quick,
Okay,
and you
yep.
just give me a thumbs up or thumbs down.
Okay.
With $4.5 trillion, we could fully decarbonize the U.S. grid.
No.
$2.3 trillion, we could create 5 million $15-an-hour jobs with benefits and cost of living adjustments for 10 years.
I'm not so sure about that
What,
one.
you're just going to invent jobs and
Yeah,
dig a hole in the yard and fill it
yeah.
up
I
again?
mean, I'm not so sure about that one because even though I hate the minimum wage, I think that at some point you do need to provide work for people. Work is better than not work. So I have to think about that one.
Government jobs?
I don't know. I have to think about that one.
$1.7 trillion could erase student debt.
No.
$449 billion could extend the child tax credit for another 10 years.
I don't really know what to think
I
about that
don't know.
one. Yeah.
$200 billion could guarantee free preschool for every 3 and 4 year old for 10 years and
No.
raise teacher pay. How
No.
about take the $200 billion and encourage moms to stay at home
Yeah.
and keep kids out of school until they're 5 or 6?
Yeah, exactly.
And we've got $25 billion could provide COVID vaccines for the population of low-income countries.
No.
Okay. Well, you're a naysayer here, aren't you now? Aren't
Now,
you
I'd be happy
there?
to spend some of that money on some other things, like hiring more border agents, hiring more courts to process people who are coming across the border illegally, and shipping them back to their
Yeah. How about, I didn't read this sentence before. So well, we've spent all of these million trillions of dollars. Meanwhile, we've neglected so much of what we really need. Okay. Militarism hasn't protected us from a pandemic that took the worst toll, took 9/11s every day, from poverty and instability driven by staggering inequality, or from hurricanes and wildfires made worse by climate change.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Okay, so there's
We know
enough of
where they're
that. All right,
coming
so
from.
before we wrap this up, what if Juche, you know that the North Korean term, it's like we don't depend on other people for
Right.
anything.
So there are apparently three countries in the world that are trying to be completely self-sufficient. And they are North Korea, Bhutan, and Turkmenistan.
Okay, so what if we took our $21 trillion, we just withdrew entirely, forget about the military aspects and the fact that the whole country would go to crap overnight. What could we not produce for ourselves with our own natural resources? We
Yeah,
just
lots.
say, I mean, we don't need rubber trees, we can make
Well,
rubber.
no, it's not a question of natural resources. There's just a lot of things like we talked about before, microchips. We cannot produce
We
enough.
could figure it out.
We could figure it out in a number of years. In 10, 20 years, we could figure it out. But
We don't have bananas.
right. So there's a lot of things that it would take a fair amount of time to build up. And absolutely, we should start doing that. We should start looking at things that are crucial to our success and say, let's make sure that we're not dependent on China for those things. We should absolutely do that. And I'd be totally in favor of taking some of those trillions of dollars and spend it on that to make sure that we're
Yeah, or even, like I said, even if we can't bring all of that manufacturing, all of that made in China stuff, if I started seeing more stuff that said made in Brazil, made in Jamaica, made,
Right.
they still wouldn't be in America, but at least it'd be in our hemisphere and to our benefit. Well, first of all, it would be closer. But I actually think they have one of the benefits of long-term thinking and a brutal dictatorship and a billion people
Yeah.
is a reliable workforce. That I'm
Yes.
not sure if you could take that, high levels of American manufacturing and moving it to Nicaragua and El Salvador and produce the same product.
Yeah. Well, I would definitely like to see a lot more long-term thinking, a lot more don't rely on people we can't rely on, a lot more making sure that we are in a situation where if we go to war with China, or if we go to, then we can actually do the things that we need to do.
Yes, so I'm not saying, you know, screw the rest of the world, but I am saying, can we at least say, is this benefiting us?
Yeah,
that's
how about
all.
That?
That's all I'm
how
asking.
How about that as a standard?
That's all I'm asking for America first to mean.
How about if the American government would look for the benefit of Americans?
Ha! Well, that's something to think about.
That's something to think about.
Cheers.
Thanks so much for listening to Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Remember to visit us at pigweedandcrowhill.com or send us an email at pigweedshow@gmail.com.